companies are growing profitably at scale, which is driving this growth in the Indian markets, right?
We ended up doing what, 17 investments this year?
Actually, we saw 200 IPOs this year, which is crazy, 45 on the main exchange. 20 of them were venture or private equity experienced founders, right? Sort of supporting and backing founders who have been through cycle, seen the journey.
You even have the old world second gen stepping out and going after the big, making it
So I think the dev ecosystem will continue to progress to make AI adoption more broad-based. Workflows will change in companies, and we are still early in terms of reimagining workflows at companies and how people operate in the future.
But the entire semiconductor world will be reimagined, and all chips will be built AI first.
Seeing founders coming out from Pune, Chennai, Hyderabad, Jaipur. So there are a bunch of these companies which are coming from what you would not associate with traditional pools of capital.
For India consumption story and India growth story is super real.
Hi everyone, welcome to the first Matrix Moment podcast of 2024. I have with me Pranay, Sudipto and Akash today to discuss our predictions for this year and have a look back of how things have gone in 2023.
Unless and until you're asking us to predict which Sam gets fired in November.
No, I think we'll restrict it to simpler things. Maybe if I just look at what's played out over the last year, right, from a very macro perspective, I think the effects of inflation and war have subsided. It's been a much better year than we sort of expected at the start of it. We sort of had this discussion at the end of 2022, and probably the year has definitely played out, better than how we had expected it to be. If you look at the global macros, inflation has subsided. The U.S. stock market is up about 40%. And Pranay, maybe we'll start with you. You're closer to this. How have things been for you?
Yeah, so I'm excited about the prediction, so we get things confidently wrong. But before that, I think US market overall, it's been a good year. I think more positive than all of us expected. So definitely feels like on a recovery path, but with caution, right? And I'll expand on both. So recovery path, because one is obviously Fed indicates like this soft landing scenario. So they predicted absolute GDP growth next year. So not a recession, and unemployment data, rate cuts, all of that falls in line with that. Second is NASDAQ has grown like 40% plus this year, which is a positive. Third is primary signals from founders, right? And I'm working with a lot of SaaS founders building from India for the US. So everyone's seeing buyers move from cost optimization mode to investment mode and backing new projects. And all of them are meeting or even exceeding new business goals, which has been very interesting. So I think broadly, we, as well as our founder community, is bullish about the next year and are investing accordingly. Caution, because I think the market recovery has been sort of a K-shaped recovery, right? Where even if you see software multiples, right, the best companies are at like a trading at 15x next 12 months. The median for SaaS companies is still around 6.5x, right? So there's a big difference between the top 10 and the rest of the world. And public market usually cascades down backwards into private late stage growth investing. So even later stage investors that we speak to pretty often, they still expect very efficient growth, very healthy metrics in companies, and their sort of pricing and valuation expectations are more in that sort of anchored towards that 6-7x, and obviously there's private market premiums and all of that. But so I think still more cautious about what happens in private markets, but bullish about primary signals from the economy overall.
Got it. And maybe closer to home, I think it's a lot more optimistic situation here. I think India continues to be one of the bright spots on the map. Our economy is largely held up, strong GDP growth. We obviously are a 777 model, so didn't have as much issues with inflation as some of the other countries in the world had. And Sudipto, maybe here's where I'll come to you. We've had a stellar run in the public markets. Nifty just crossed 21,000 this month. Sensex crossed 71,000. We are at 18.5% plus CAGR YTD. How are things trending closer to home?
Got it. Thanks, Anish, and great to do this year. I think it's great to predict and do these predictions, because all of us anyways got it wrong for India in 2023. And both the public and the private markets, I think, did much better than anticipated and what we could have expected at the beginning of the year. Maybe touching upon a little bit on the public market story, you obviously said Nifty is at an all-time high. It grew by over 18% in this year, and we still have one more crazy week of December left. For me, the big thing here is why Nifty has grown and what has happened in the India market. And two key takeaways. A, if you look at the 18% growth, more than 14% of that is actually driven by EPS growth and only 4% because of multiple expansion, which means that our companies are growing profitably at scale, which is driving this growth in the Indian markets, right? The second, if you look at where did the money come from, and the entire amount actually came from domestic institutional investors, because FIIs actually were net negative in terms of the amount that they invested in equity this year in the Indian markets. So overall, at a macro, the sort of the public markets did really well, but powered by companies that are growing and domestic investors which are continuing to invest, which is why also I think the next 2 years look good for the economy.
Yeah, and I think you make an important point. So corporate earnings have been sort of driving results in the public markets. And if you look at our own portfolio and the public portfolio, scale and profitability are compounding and they're happening together. So you're seeing higher profitability at larger scale. If you look at off business, they've grown their PAT more than 200% this year. Five Star, which just went public last year, is compounding PAT at 30% plus. So I can see how we're getting into that virtuous cycle where a lot more companies are getting into profitability faster and at that scale are sort of continuing to expand margins. Maybe Akash, coming to you, how have you seen the early stage venture market play out, and what's on top of mind for founders?
Yeah, what's on top of mind for founders is starkly different, I think. That's the question you keep hearing. At least the last 6 to 9 months, the one question that has been common all across has been, hey, when is the winter getting over, the so-called winter?
And can you just explain why, when we are talking about all this optimistic thing, why is this winter message coming?
And I think that there is this mismatch which has existed, right, in the early stage ecosystem. And the context is, if you look back at 23, it was more about similar but fewer, right? The similarity was to 21 and 22. If you look at, let's take two different rounds, right? The pre-seed or the formative round, nothing changed. It used to be 500K at about 5.7 million pre-money globally, right? US, India, everywhere. 23 was same. If you look at seed or institutional rounds, they used to be about 3.5 at 12 to 14 pre-money median. That's the same. Nothing changed, right? What changed was two things. We saw fewer of these rounds, right? Coming out of this zero interest rate phenomena to now, as Pranay said, optimistic but cautious. We saw fewer of these rounds. Good quality founders, good teams, which were focused on the right things, getting funded. Nothing changed for them. I think the second thing which changed was the 2020 to 2022 cohort of pre-seed seeded companies. Many of them even ended up raising a follow-on round very quickly. They were overcapitalized and they haven't yet grown into a zone where the traction, and again, contextualizing from how Pranay said, publics cascade down to privates. We didn't see that, right? I can't comprehend or think of many companies who were at 6 to 10x NTM and out there to raise a round. So what changed when founders say, when does the winter end, is we somehow had gotten used to, in 21, 22, to these fast markups, fast follow-on rounds with not much changing on the traction front. I think 23 saw that change, right? Otherwise, the early stage market remained as buoyant, as active. I think we ended up doing, 17 investments this year?
Yeah.
So I don't think early stage anything changed fundamentally.
And I think just adding for maybe venture-backed companies, right? Not early stage, but early to growth stage. We saw record number of IPOs happening in the last 18 odd months. Like, actually, we saw 200 IPOs this year, which is crazy. 45 on the main exchange. 20 of them were venture or private equity backed. So over the last 18 months, we've got so many companies which have actually gone and done IPO, providing liquidity to investors, founders and employees, but also starting to set the benchmark of what is the right and fair valuation, right? Which is very interesting and promising to see.
Yeah, no, definitely agree. And I also think there has been a cohort of founders who are now more through cycle and you're sort of really coming out with courage of conviction and with newer ideas. And then what you said, right, which is, you know, capital getting concentrated in some of these pockets. That's
definitely
but
which
happening.
Is precisely our strategy and issue, exactly. Experienced founders, right? Sort of supporting and backing founders who have been through cycle, seen their journey and sort of building it again. And as you rightly mentioned, now that a lot of these first generation companies have seen cycles, gone to IPO, gotten the liquidity, we are seeing more and more of these founders coming up.
And not just these second generation from, you know, venture funded companies. I think Sudipto in Delhi and many of us see this across the ecosystem now. You even have the old world second gen stepping out and going after the big making the opportunity. You want to talk about that?
Actually, that's a big trend line for 2023, which is where...
So maybe before we do that, Sudipto, can you just define this old world? Just talk, help the audience understand what in our parlance means old world versus, you know, what's
so essentially, venture in India has been there for maybe 20, 25 years. Typically, companies, venture has founded entrepreneurs mostly in tech, and those companies have sort of become large companies like Ola, Zomato, Flipkart, etc. But India was always a country of industrialists. Tatas and Birlas and Ambanis were industrialists and entrepreneurs of a generation before. And similar to them, there are thousands of entrepreneurs at 100, 1,000, 2,000 crores of scale who are building business in manufacturing, in distribution, in regional consumer brands, building social media and entertainment companies, financial services. And India is full of those micro entrepreneurs who are powering the country, right? A lot of them are actually now either the founders themselves or the second generation are now adopting to tech, and they are saying we will continue to do, for example, manufacturing, but tech first. We'll do lending, but tech first. So the VC-backed technology founders are saying we'll go more offline and do sort of in some shape and form real businesses, cash flow businesses. And the cash flow business founders are saying we're adopting tech. And I think 2023 was an interesting year and might be a seminal year when we look back, when sort of both those worlds came much more closer together. And as investors, we're excited about investing in both the sort of the pools of founders.
So actually, that's an important point in what we'd like to call convergence to phygital. And, you know, Pranay, I'd like to sort of, we have done a couple of deals of that nature this year and wanted to understand from you. Are you seeing the same thing in software where you have folks from networks and folks from large companies, acquisitions coming out and building this from more non-traditional backgrounds? And just talk us through how has that played out?
So, interesting question. And in software, I think not entirely, but we've seen obviously SaaS companies at scale, right? And they have been around now for a decade, decade and a half. So a lot of founders from there spinning out want to build themselves. So that's the clear and obvious one. The other one is every technology company, right, over the last decade and a half has gone through hypergrowth. Right, and they've seen this hyperscaling journey, right? Be it the Flipkarts and PhonePes and Swiggies and Olas of the world. So I think engineering talent over there, right? And India has the largest base of engineers anywhere in the world, right? So those people are stepping out and saying, I want to solve my problems, right? So I think a lot of founders who are building developer products because they have been engineers and engineering leaders in the past, have seen the journey of hyperscale, are running sophisticated technology stacks, and they want to build products to solve their own problems also, right? So that's the second interesting pool of founders that we see. Yeah.
No, I think that's interesting. And hopefully, as you said, 2023 might actually be a seminal year. Looking forward in 2024.
We'll know in 10 years.
It's a good thing about our
business.
It
takes time in our business.
Every prediction or result takes 10 years. So. But yeah, looking at 2024, and I can see how, you know, a lot of these companies and these kind of founders and backgrounds will sort of raise more and more capital. Mm. But what are you seeing on the enterprise software side and AI? And there's just been a lot of talk about it this year.
Yeah. So predictions is interesting.
Yeah.
Nobody has a crystal ball, but I'll take a go with mine. So I think broadly, a lot of AI companies, right? And if I talk across the stack, I think we are interested at the bottom end, which is semiconductor foundational models, and at the top end, which is the application layer, right? And people say, okay, application layer may happen, not happen, wrapper around models. I think my point of view is I'm broadly bullish, right? And I think there is this entire journey that a lot of people have talked about going from prototyping to production, right? I think one is slightly cautious about the pace, and I think it's still early because there's a lot of change, right? There is workflow innovation of how companies operate, right? It's like if you take a company like Canva, which incidentally Matrix US had funded, it made everyone a good designer, right? You didn't have to do handovers between team to get a good creative out. Similarly, I think workflows will change in companies, and we are still early in terms of reimagining workflows at companies and how people operate in the future. Basis that, I think UX innovation has to happen, and I think Chat GPT, for example, made it very broad-based that people understand today chat as an interface. Is it still the best UX for every use case? It's not, right? So I think UX innovation has to happen so that people are able to utilize these tools. The third is that people have their behavior patterns need to change, right? And I've bought a lot of sales tech, so I relate to that persona, right? A VP sales is used to having Salesforce, structured data entry, using it to run a pipeline review and getting to a forecast, right? Now, for that person with 20 years of experience to use something where you're saying, hey, it's a black box and it will spit out recommendations is hard, right? So I think behaviors have to change. And layering on the fourth one is buyers need to know what to look for, how to evaluate, how to buy, right? And do they trust these systems enough? Are they secure? Are they private? So I think there's a lot of hoops to cross to successfully sell applications, right? So I think I'm still bullish long-term. I think a lot of companies will break out, but I think it's still early and it takes time for the market to absorb these changes, right? So AI applications, I think bullish a little early. On the developer side, on this journey of prototyping to production, and Akash can probably talk a little more about it, but I think when you're prototyping, you're trying to get an MVP out, right? Most founders we speak to, the ones we've backed, usually revert back to OpenAI because it's the easiest and fastest, right? Once you hit production, you are trying to scale on quality metrics, right? That's where you either fine-tune models or you pick task-specific, domain-specific models or pick something open source and try to tune it to your use case. So I think as we scale, there is the MVP phase, then there is the quality scaling phase, which is sort of, again, fine-tuning models and getting quality metrics up. Then there is the cost scaling phase, right? That at scale, you start thinking about cost structures and margins, right? And we know like a lot of applications, maybe margin structures don't make sense today. And at that point, then again, you start looking at smaller models, open source models, things you can host versus just hitting OpenAI and running your bills super high, right? So I think on the developer side of the house, this just ability to kind of manage, consume multiple models, I think get quality metrics up, keep costs under control, making products reliable, a lot of problem statements over there. So I think the dev ecosystem will continue to progress to make AI adoption more broad-based.
Right? Yeah, this AI piece, and Pranay just summed it up very precisely, right? Applied AI sort of has been the thing that we as investors have been excited about. I think just on the dev piece, right? The first generation always tends to be wrappers, which is what we saw. And hence, maybe there is a lot of skepticism globally on these applied AI pieces. As he said, long-term big believers.
I take offense to the term wrappers. If someone's building wrappers, please talk to me.
Yeah, so exactly, right? So there is this skepticism in the West. We have always found applied AI to be super interesting. And I think the other big prediction I would have going ahead would be A, we'll move from V2 to V1 of prototypes to V2, V3. As that world evolves, I think, so an anecdote that comes to mind is, if you have been deep enough in the deep learning world, you would be that, hey, early era was TensorFlow, now it's PyTorch, right? So when these iterations happen from the developer lens, I would say a lot of the things we'll see in the interim or what we saw in terms of infra and framework in this V1 journey might not hold true going ahead, right? I think we are too early in that cycle. We're going to iterate through it. And the actual end, if you think of the software engineering evolution, right? You had infra, frameworks, observability, same things which will then come to this new software engineering world, which is not deterministic and more probabilistic when you're using foundation models as a compute engine. We'll see a lot more evolution. So I think we are super excited about everything applied AI. And as Pranay said, don't think of anything as wrappers. If you're building something meaningful, customer backwards, please hit us up.
And just adding on the AI theme, the last part that we continue to be bullish is just the semiconductor powering up the AI. If you look at the past year, it's unclear who will make an AI other than NVIDIA, right? Because all the, at least money today is accruing to the folks who are building GPUs for hyperscalers. And I think there's a clear opportunity there. And it does not mean that you, like someone goes and builds AI chiplets or GPUs, right? Which is extremely costly. But the entire semiconductor world will be reimagined. And all chips will be built AI first. There was no need to redesign chips for the last 20, 25 years, which is why companies built a chip and continued to sell that for 10, 20 years. I think that will fundamentally change. And a lot of opportunities in India as well, as there are more and more customers across EVs, across electronics, defense, etc., where you can build AI-first chips on the edge for Indian customers, which is another exciting theme within AI that we are bullish about.
And in context of AI, the last prediction would be compute, data, application. On data would be that the data tooling sprawl will go down. The number of VC-funded companies which are out there doing thin slices of the modern data stack, it has become a total mess. Coming here, I would be super keen and excited about looking at people really cleaning that mess up and the data stack evolving.
While Akash was saying that, Snowflake just bought another company.
So
what I'm hearing is you're consistently bullish on the secular trend, and then you're saying whether you're selling, it's a gold rush, whether you're actually digging the gold or you're selling the shovels or you're selling jeans, in some form or the other, all of the stack will be rewritten and there are opportunities to make money throughout the value chain. And speaking of secular trends, I think, Sudipto invests in a lot of danda businesses. So let me come to you. What are some things that, what has sort of played out and you're looking to bet over the next 5 to 10 years? For example, personally in financial services and fintech, it's a penetration story, right? It's credit. Digital payments, we've seen the last 7-8 years truly transform digital payments. Credit is just getting, it always is lagging the requirement. So we are truly bullish on MSME
now,
credit.
Now even wealth.
Yeah, and now we are getting into that, over the next 5 years, we'll get into that sweet zone of per capita per GDP where wealth and insurtech will definitely sort of leapfrog. So there's a penetration story in financial services and fintech and user experience and access and how you can deliver it in low cost. What are you sort of seeing as secular trends in the sectors you invest?
Thank you for saying danda businesses. Point well taken. But at Matrix, we are really bullish for the next 10 to 12 years for the country. Actually, why 10 to 12 years? Maybe 25 years ahead. Because it's very tough to comprehend what a $4 trillion economy that's compounding 6, 7, 8% year on year looks 10 years down the line. And it's very difficult to imagine what's the difference when from a $4 trillion economy, we go to a $10 trillion economy and $6 trillion of new GDP is added. And we are extremely bullish on that happening over the next 8, 10 years. And that is for me the big secular trend for the country. Now, what are the sectors that will propel some of this growth? Obviously, one core sector is manufacturing. Second is energy and electrification. Third is defense spending. Fourth is obviously consumer, because as the per capita GDP in India increases, people have more disposable income to spend on brands, on convenience, etc. So bunch of mega themes, but the big theme for me in India is just the country growing. And when the country grows, what all parts of the economy that will grow?
And the consumer bit doesn't grow linearly. I think the most important point is when the per capita GDP grows, the consumer spending grows disproportionately discretionary. And I think which is where all of us are big believers of the India consumption story, be it premiumization, be it digital transactions for actual digital goods, right? So we have seen gaming now go from nothing to a massive sector. Some of the largest outcomes in venture are gaming. So I think all across the secular trend line for India consumption story and India growth story is super real. And
there's travel, there's luxury travel goods, and
that's not only we speaking. Like last year, some of us went to China, met a bunch of our portfolio companies, Matrix China, went to US, met a bunch of folks there. And for the first time, the amount of FOMO I've heard all around in whichever country that I've gone to for India and India's growth story is insane. Like never before when I went to Valley and spoke with my friends, we were working at the sort of cutting edge of technology in one of the big MNCs, they were asking about opportunities to come back to India. I had never in my life gone to China and Chinese investors having FOMO on India. So the next 10 years and the secular trend line, it's not only what we believe, but it's sort of what the world believes India to do for the next 10 odd years.
And we have done a great job of the narrative, but not just the belief, right? Even on the ground, you can see it. So let's say consumer brands, D2C. Founders would typically take anywhere between 12 to 18 months earlier, 3 years back, 4 years back, to launch and to get to, let's say, 2 CR monthly run rate. Today, the number of founders with minuscule rounds, even bootstrapped many times, getting to 4 or 5 CR monthly in less than 12 months, is just umpteen number of them. There is no shortage of them, right? So you can see and feel it. You can feel that this is happening. The narrative is very solid, very strong. The trend line is super strong. And I think none of us could have predicted this, and we're super happy to be here.
Yeah, and I think you make an important point, which is a large part of the incremental GDP, and we are true believers in this, which is going to be digital, right? So, you know, India is going to be a 10 trillion economy by 2035.
And that's the fidgetal point, right? The digital entrepreneurs will build for a new India, and entrepreneurs who are actually building traditional businesses are now adopting tech. So it's all of us coming together and saying that, where does the next 6 trillion come from?
Yeah. And that presents a huge market cap value. And we had sort of estimated this earlier last year. And probably...
Which is why we're very excited to invest.
So $3 trillion probably of market cap that's going to get created over the next few years. So coming to Matrix and, you know, how we are sort of thinking about the next year, how do things pan out for us, right? So does something change? What are the stages we play in? Are there new sectors that we're looking to invest in? Maybe let's just start with Pranay.
So before going forward, I'll ask, what did we do this year? Right. So,
I think we did more of the same. I think first of all, as we all know, we invest across sectors. We continue to do that. We invest in early stage, which means more seed, Series A deals. We did a lot of that. We spoke about experienced founders, people who have seen through cycle and are building for the building again with all their learnings. We invest in a bunch of those companies in software, in financial services. And we have started backing investing in companies which are in the phygital space. We are back to investing in NBFCs again, right? So we did more of the same, but we did it with a larger team, more focus. And ended up doing 17, 18 deals this year.
And also the size and quantum of investment. I think we've written a bunch of large checks, which are 20 million plus. And Cash, how do you sort of think about new sectors, larger checks? Any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think in a deepening market, you'll see all of this. Right? I think this is the secular trend line is not just true for founders, it's also true for VCs. All of us as investors and VCs. We'll see more and more. As Sudipto said, we've been doing the same. We'll continue doing pretty much the same. It will continue being seed to Series B, which includes few larger checks, which includes backing founders, with 10,000 hours. All of that will continue. I think in the coming years, this ecosystem is just going to deepen, right? And having been seeing this for now, my first ever foundership journey, which was way back in 2009, I can't think of a better time to be a founder in this country, right? You have a deep VC ecosystem, you have a great secular trend line, you have all the interest of foreign capital, and obviously with markets adjusting the way it comes back for latent growth, I think this is the best time for people to be founders.
Got it. Pranay, you want to add something?
So if I think about
what changed in 2024?
What changed in 2023? I think first is we announced our new fund, which is a $550 million vehicle, much larger than the previous one, which gives us the opportunity to play across early and early growth. So seed to Series A used to be the sweet spot. We started doing some Series B checks. I think second big thing for me was velocity was consistent. I think at least founders who were crushing on the ecosystem self-selected themselves out of the market. So people we met, I think founders who are serious about starting start in all environments, right? And last year, I think there were still great founders in market. Deals were still extremely competitive, right? And fortunately or unfortunately, I think pricing was still a little bit higher because the best founders can attract capital.
You paid those prices.
You paid those prices.
I'm not the only person here doing that. But so I think velocity has been good. We have a new fund behind us that we are deploying out of. I think the other interesting shift for me was earlier, at least coming in even 3-4 years back, it felt like India to the US was just software, right? And before that, it used to be IT services. Right now, I see that playing out across every sector, right? We have B2B companies who are seeing it as one way to unlock margins, to actually export and distribute internationally. We are seeing it in consumer companies, right? So gaming is an obvious one, right? Zynga and all had their teams here when they were making games on Facebook back in the day. So a lot of these founders are building games and like sort of monetizing internationally. I think it plays out in media. One of our portfolio companies is
even consumer brands now,
right? Consumer brands.
We've invested in a consumer brand
which is doing India to the US. So I think that trend is playing out across sectors, right? And it's, again, for me, it goes back to ambition, right? So obviously there are founders building India for India, but all of them, even some of the scale-up founders, are looking at that as the next big unlock and actually want to create truly international companies, right? So I think that's been a big shift in my mind, and I think also how we think about opportunity.
So, you know, if I just look back at my year, this year, there's been a lot more travel. And it's been to more interior parts of the country. And I think there's true dispersion of value happening in terms of creation. You're seeing founders coming out from Pune, Chennai, Hyderabad, Jaipur. We've also visited Haryana and, you know, I'd also been to Mathura. So there are a bunch of these companies which are coming from what you would not associate with traditional pools of capital. And they're able to raise. So I think there is more and more we're going to see countries, you know, places like the Northeast, certain parts of Northwestern India, and southern parts.
But that's digital and real world, right? What we were talking about. When you start building manufacturing, investing in manufacturing, when you start investing in NBFCs, etc., they are obviously built where the consumers are, customers are, or where the workforce is, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Should we just do a rapid fire round then and sort of pick on some of the interesting things that have transpired this year? Maybe let's start with the number of unicorns we had at the beginning of the year. 150, how many of them are real?
Maybe 60-70%, not more.
You guys have a view?
Maybe 30% are real today and another 30% will grow into unicorn. So similar to what
I your definitions of real are different.
No, it's the same. It's the same. We're talking about the same thing.
Probably half.
Half. And do you see the other half sort of using the rest of the capital they've raised and to get to somewhere, or do you think there's a pivot or a better
solution? I think some of them can grow into it. And potentially find ways to build, you know, as Sudipta would tell you, at least 20-30 million of PAT. But for many of them, it might just be an existential question. Some of those might just not pan out.
And for companies which are real but can't grow, you will see a lot of acquisitions happening. But if the unit economics is not working and the core itself is not stable, then I think 2024 will be a very difficult year for those companies.
Or similar view, I think there are some companies where you don't have an economic model that works, and I think those ones will struggle. I think for me, that would be probably 10-20%. For the others, they probably have a good business model that may or may not be very scalable, right? So in those cases, I think they're fundamentally healthy businesses, but probably not ones which can be on the hyper growth journey and match venture expectations, right? So over there, I think slow growth or profitable growth or M&A or something like that can play out.
One new investment that you would like to make this year, which probably no one in the market is looking at, maybe a subsector or a trend line you would like to back?
Maybe just someone saying, how do you really capture the gaming dollars in India? Everyone has been the Indian entrepreneurs have done it for global products, whereas global products have come and built $200 million plus businesses in India. And I'm talking outside of real money, so maybe one of those.
Part of the EV supply chain, so if you had to pick one, maybe motors and drivetrains for EV.
Why is that different?
What? It is, right? Lesser number of components and moving parts and architecture of the EVs. slightly different.
But Pranay, is there anything you would like to sort of pick as a subsector trend line and double down on this year? Only one.
So I think companies which are doing something which is not AI, right? Like, again, maybe they don't get enough interest, but I think there's still a lot of real businesses to be built over there.
Okay, moving on. Cash, do you see a $10 billion IPO coming?
24, given hopefully the government coming back, yes.
Yes, and hopefully one of our portfolio companies. Don't want to name and jinx them.
Actually, there are companies which were sort of sub 10 and now with the public markets have crossed 10, Zomato being one, but Pranay.
I was just going to say, my belief is maybe not IPO at 10, but post-IPOs companies that run up to the 10 plus.
Yeah, and that's also a very interesting thing where we've seen sort of companies doing well post-IPO. Earlier, it used to be venture capital used to see IPO being sort
so
of...
So, I have one question, rapid fire, right? So, since if you look at the US, right, last 20 years, obviously crazy amount of growth, a lot of startups, but probably 80% of capture in terms of market cap were the FANG companies, right? Yeah. Which were like early 2000s or went public in that decade. So when you think about the next 10 years, do you think, and India has this history of conglomerates, right? The Reliances and Adanis of the world. So do you think a lot of value accrues to a few of these companies, be it some of these companies from tech who go public and then continue to add more businesses and scale, or do you think a lot of it accrues to the founders?
The big will get bigger, but there will be a lot more large companies that are created because the opportunities across multiple different sectors and different companies will be going after that. But will big continue to get bigger? Absolutely.
And I think when you say India has been the land of conglomerates, India has also been the land of SMEs and micro entrepreneurs. And I think both will coexist. So you will see them getting bigger, but there will be bigger outcomes even from other companies.
I also think there will be, we spoke about this, the digital industrialists. I think people who have created value and who have sort of
so the scale all of you are being very politically correct. So now as venture investors, right, the big getting bigger is one, or as investors, right, big getting bigger is one thesis. When you say micro entrepreneurs, that's probably interesting for the entrepreneur, maybe not as much for an investor who's expecting a multiple on capital.
I think, Pranay, I have a different view.
Where do you invest?
You're sort of seen more life, but as an investor, what do I want? I want more hit rate, right? I want more number of companies to sort of scale and become winners. And when you have big becoming bigger, you miss a few and then you sort of miss an entire wave. You ideally want value creation to be more distributed, both in terms of income equality as well as in terms of
That's what you want. What he's saying, that if big becomes bigger, do we invest? I think we absolutely invest.
We absolutely invest.
Because, see, you can say US significant value creation went to FANG, but the number of unicorns that the the country created, right, at 10 trillion, if we can get 200, 300 real billion-dollar plus companies, and then few of them become 100 billion plus, that's really good for the
economy. Actually, a simple way to think of it this way, right? Do we believe that are there going to be enough 40, 50 million dollar top line businesses will get created, 100 billion top line businesses will get created, which are going to be real, which will have 15, 20 million dollar plus pack, 100%, right? And as long as those get created, it's a great opportunity for us as VCs, it's a great opportunity for founders.
So maybe one last prediction before we wrap up, how's the Nifty going to do next year?
Being optimistic, at least plus 15%.
Yeah, Nifty should be 15, but a significant portion next year should be driven by large market caps and not mid and SME, what sort of created the value this year.
I think along the same lines as this year.
Pranay only sleeps NASDAQ.
15%, and all of us will be correctively wrong.
Cool. Yes. Thank you.
That's a good note to end on.
Yeah. I think that's a good note to end. It was great doing this chat. And hope some of our predictions get true next year, which we'll revisit in December 2024.
Thanks for joining us.